baby. Yes, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the You're Still Out Golf Podcast. I am your host, JT. The You're Still Out Book Club is back for another episode. Our book club episodes always presented by Lincoln Park Golf Club. They signed on back in the spring to be the presenting sponsor of the You're Still Out Golf Book Club. We are going to be reviewing A Course Called America by Tom Coyne, a great read that details a plethora of golf courses in the United States. Surprised, frankly, that Tom didn't get by Lincoln Park and sample it while he was in his travels. Lincoln Park, a great place to play anytime, specifically this fall. While college football season is nearing its end, you can still get out for a twilight round at a non-twilight time based on the promo of kickoff time equaling twilight fees. Yes, anytime OU or OSU is kicking off at 11 a.m., come out early, play some golf, and get that twilight fee at Lincoln Park. Really appreciate them not only being our podcast home here in our Lincoln Park studios, but obviously sponsoring the You're Still Out Golf Book Club. Per the usual, my co-host on our book review pods, none other than Justin Hoppick. J-Hop, welcome back to another edition of the You're Still Out Book Club, buddy.
Good morning, America.
Man in the can, get back in that can. 97.8.
Am I sounding raspy this morning?
Tampa St. Pete.
And then sinus infections hit hard here in Oklahoma.
Hop, we could potentially spend way too much time covering this book because there was a lot covered in the book. A Course Called America, again by Tom Coyne. A guy who, if you are into reading golf books, I'm sure you have read one of his golf books before. A Course Called Ireland, A Course Called Scotland, two of his other books following, I would say, a similar trajectory in terms of how it's written. In those two, he kind of travels the entire countries, playing, I think, every links golf course in each of those countries. He also has written books, A Paper Tiger, where he attempts to, he spends a whole year trying to get good enough to play professional golf. Another novel, A Gentleman's Game, named one of the 25 best sports books of all time by the Philadelphia Daily News. So my first question for you, Mr. Hoppick, as it relates to A Course Called America, kind of what were your expectations coming into the book? I know that you had sampled the other books, and so you had a little bit of an idea, but what were your expectations pre-read of A Course Called America?
But I've got an issue before even answering your question. I'm sorry. I've got to get it off my chest. Tom went and visited all 50 states, playing golf in all 50 states. He visited one course in Oklahoma, and that's fine. That's fine. You know, he doesn't have time for everything. But I counted 32 courses in New York. Now,
East Coast bias, baby.
Now, we should clarify that his goal was to visit every single U.S. Open course,
right,
on his journey in search for it. And that was one of the caveats to visiting all 50. He wanted to visit all 50 states, but also visit every single U.S. So maybe there are 29 New York courses, and then you know. Threw in an extra nine holer here or there for 36 hole day, but
I almost wonder if it started out, I'm going to visit all U.S. Open, all former U.S. Open sites. Mm-hmm. And then once he saw that he was going to be visiting a majority of the states, it's like, yeah, well, I might as well try to play golf in all 50 states. And Southern Hills was the only overlap of the two, where it's hosted a U.S. Open and it's a very well-known course in Oklahoma. Yeah. Hopefully, Tom will come back to the great state of Oklahoma and sample some of its other courses.
And I can't fathom, and he gets into the logistics challenge. I'm sure it's a super hard challenge throughout the year with daughters at home and keeping the wife happy and visiting and trying to drive and hit all 50 states on different trips. and get on these courses with other people's schedules. Can't fathom the logistical nightmare that it was. Very impressive feat that he did it. I'm not complaining, but just something that I noticed. I counted 32. I'm reading all these courses in New York and New Jersey and up there in the Northeast, and was just like, dang, and he only visited one in Oklahoma and one in a lot of different states, but I digress. Sorry, off topic, back on topic. What were my expectations before reading the book? You know, obviously it's a course called America. So my first question is he going to actually name his favorite, what course represents America to him? And most books try to throw a curveball at the end. And so I'm like, nah, that's too obvious. He's not going to name a course. He's going to give some existential answer, some composite of all these different courses, or he's going to say, the Great American Golf Course is wherever you and your buddies play.
Right, right.
Right? But he actually names a course.
He does.
And I'm not going to tell it. Are you going to spoil it for the listeners?
I don't think we should. I think one of the reasons that we do these is to get folks reading in general and reading golf books, and we would encourage you to go out. We're going to be posting this sometime in the month of November, a great time for kind of holiday shopping. Either I would suggest buying it yourself and giving it to yourself as a present, but certainly put it on whoever buys your Christmas presents. And that will be a hook. If you want to know what Tom Coyne names as the Great American Golf Course, you got to go pick it up and you got to find out what course he gave that lofty recognition to. We're going to get to our Great American Golf Course a little bit later in the pod. But I would agree with that assessment. Coming into it.
Did you have any expectations?
Coming into it, I was wondering how he was going to visit all these courses over the course of a year and do that when he does have another job. He has kids at home, but also was curious, would he do some rankings? I will say in the back of the book, there is not a complete ranking, but he kind of categorizes them in different ways, like best public, best walking course, etc.
And I actually love that he put what he shot at every round.
Right. Yeah.
We're not supposed to care what other people shoot, but for some reason I wanted to see, did he shoot the highest score at Southern Hills or Prairie Dunes or something? Like, did it kick his butt?
So there's another cool hook for going ahead and picking up the book so that you can see how his golf fared. A very good golfer, I think, by any measure. A guy who is very capable of shooting under par. Yep. But as we all are, he put up some rather large numbers as well during his trek.
Going to happen when you play. I don't know. How many courses did he play? Do you remember? I don't know.
Man, you put me on the spot.
He played 32 in New York, so he played more than 50. But anyways... it's a very encouraging people to go read this. It's a super easy read. One that I like that you can just read a few pages and put down and come back to a week later and you're not going to miss anything because every course, is a page or two long. So, really easy read. While you're looking that up,
I got it right here. Okay. I got it right here. He played 295 courses over the course of this year. That was 5,182 holes of golf,
and only one in Oklahoma. I feel like Boiling Springs could have fit into that.
The thing you got to give him a little bit of a break here for two reasons. Like, he could have spent a whole year just playing golf in Oklahoma, right? And
maybe JT should do this, right? His own Oklahoma.
I mean, a course called Oklahoma. Are you kidding me? I don't know if Tom, maybe that may be some trademark infringement. I'm not sure. Now, again, the other caveat is this book was written, I believe, in 2019, maybe published early 2020.
How wild and lucky was he to get it in right before?
And that was kind of right around when the Boiling Springs hype machine started to come to fruition. So again, that's a short 3 years ago, and we think about how far Boiling Springs has come since then.
Wild.
But it might not have been on his radar as much as it would be if he was setting out to do that over the next couple of years. And I think folks would be trumpeting Boiling Springs.
Very true.
But let's get into it, man.
I've got the first question for you.
Yeah, we can hop around and talk about a few different things, but I know we have. I know we wanted to talk about course he would have spent more time on, course we were excited to read about because we had played there, et cetera, et cetera. So you tell me where you want to start.
Some bad things as well, yeah.
I'm going to let you have first go at the first question.
It's not all roses here at A Course Called America. You're gonna run into some bad stuff every once in a while.
Some bad actors out there.
But what course did you find yourself most wanting to play after reading about it in the book?
Course I most wanted to
play. That you haven't played.
That I haven't played yet, which that would be a good caveat for that question. I honed in on Gearheart Golf Links as the course that I most wanted to play after reading. Now, I will say that it was a course that has been high on my I want to play it list for several years now, and reading this book only made me more excited to play it. Gearheart Golf Links, a course in Gearheart, Oregon, I would say on the northwest coast of Oregon, about an hour and a half outside of Portland. If anybody is going to be the foremost expert on links golf, I would say Tom Coyne is that, again, given he's played every links course in Scotland, every links course in Ireland. And so when I read here on page 146, he says, "What I found when I arrived was the rare American course that deserved the label links." That jumped off the page at me high praise from Tom, and put it into that echelon of course, man, I really want to play this. So that would be my answer.
That's just how authentic that makes it feel.
Yeah, and again, this is, I think, the only time that I'm going to read verbatim out of the book, at least that I had written down. He also says, not only did Gearheart's golf mimic the style of the British Isles, but its setting as a community hub that was essentially Irish and Scottish ingredient that even our sandiest American links tended to lack. So coming off of a year of which I had the true blessing of getting to go play links golf in Scotland, to read that Gearheart not only had the conditions that I was so enamored with, but had the vibe, if you will, put it at the top of my list of courses that I wanted to play after reading it. I had plenty. In fact, we could have stayed on this question,
sure,
and just done a whole podcast on this question, because it was the one, as I was filling out my my little chart here, that I had a hard time limiting to one.
But I was reading, yeah, I kept filling in.
But I will maybe we'll give ourselves an honorable mention. But I'll kick it back to you. What course after reading about it were you most excited to play?
So mine is actually one that I'd never heard of before, which is exciting. That there's, you know, he did visit 295 courses, so there's a ton in there that I've never even heard of before. But it was after playing the Bridge, which is a very unique, and he waxed poetic about the Bridge. I think it was the head pro of the Bridge took him on a ferry across to Shelter Island to play the Goat, which is actually named after the Flying Goat as well, aka the Flying Goat, named after the restaurant on the island. It's a little nine-holer that costs $15. Plays super firm and fast, with crazy bounces, just like a links course, and he had an absolute blast. So that was the one that kind of stood out to me and was like, you know, if he had that much fun playing it, like I'm dying to go play that and fit in very well with what I'm looking for in A Course Called America.
It's funny you bring up the Bridge. I thought that's where you were going.
The Bridge. Yeah. Which could be totally. Yeah.
And it was interesting. I had read, so this is actually the second time I've read this book, and the Bridge stuck out to me,
yeah,
because it was featured also in the Golfer's Journal, and I wondered, had Tom gone there and written this book, and then they did the Golfer's Journal piece, or vice versa, in a very, very unique place, to your point that, you know, we're talking about, it used to be a race car track, and this guy bought it and turned it into this very funky golf course. But you're right, it was great writing that he waxed poetic about it and then said that he had even more fun at this scruffy, you know, nine-holer kind of across the water that the head pro at the Bridge took him to. So I think there is a little bit of that to this book, where you expect him to talk about all the big name courses.
Sure.
And there's some great little nuggets of places.
Would I turn down an invite to Shinnecock? No.
Right. But, right. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's always fun to read about the ones that you've never even heard of that you're not expecting.
So let me throw this question at you again. 295 courses that he played. Obviously, even in a book that, I don't know, by my check is probably, you know, 400 pages long or so. Course that you wish he would have spent more time on during the book. I think that one of the things that surprised both of us is that there were certain times where it was like a couple what seemingly were throwaway lines. A
couple sentences
about goes over to this right. other course. Uh-huh. And so was there a course there that stuck out to you?
This question actually had me listing more courses than the one before.
Where really?
I was
okay.
Like, man, I wish you would have covered this one. But the one that stood out to me is one that I've played. And so therefore I already know, like, hey, this is a badass course that I hope he raves about, was looking forward to. And just kind of the course is Mossy Oak in West Point, Mississippi. Gil Hance design, fairly new. It's his own design across the street from Old Waverly, which is a private, very Southern feel. You know, the Mannings are members there, you know, being in Mississippi. And he spent more time talking about Old Waverly and the founder there and how that came about, which totally understand. That one's got more history and more of a story, and it's hosted some major events. But Mossy Oak across the street, if anybody gets a chance to go, I cannot recommend it enough going down there. It's very affordable for a weekend trip. And he does give Mossy Oak a quick line that's fantastic. It's a prime 3-day golf getaway in the last place I would have expected to find a buddy trip perfection. And it is because there's these black cabins that line the 10th hole along Mossy Oak. And there's only a couple trees on the property. You can see almost every hole from walking out your back patio there. And so it plays firm and fast, no trees, hit it all over the place, just wild ride, really fun, public accessible golf course. It is a little bit higher end. I think you're probably going to spend $100 or $150 on the round, but the cabins are very affordable. It's definitely not like going to Sand Valley or Bandon. It's a different tier.
Gotcha.
Yep. So what is the course you wish he spent more time on?
Well, as I tend to do on these book review pods or times where we're listing something, I kind of like to throw a bit of a curveball. I'm actually going to say a course that I wish he had covered at all. That would be Wild Horse in Gothenburg, Nebraska. I was shocked that it wasn't one of the courses that he visited while he was in Nebraska.
100%.
And so that would be the course that I wish he'd spent more time on, because he, in fact, did not spend any time on it.
Yeah.
I was actually going to also...
Why is that? Do you like Wild Horse?
I do love Wild Horse. I'm actually, based on another question a little later, I'm going to get into that. I will say that we didn't kind of talk about what our answers were going to be.
It sounds like we might be...
I had Southern Hills as a talking point here in terms of course I wish he would have spent more time on, because... Mm-hmm. You know, since he only visited one golf course in Oklahoma, I was hoping he would go a little deeper into whether it be the Perry Maxwell history there, or the amount of majors that it's hosted, or even some...
The murders.
murders in the parking lot, things of that nature. I will say, super happy that in the book, gives a shout out to the Perry Maxwell Society, which was absolutely dope.
Yeah.
That jumped off the page. I was literally tickled whenever I read that he went to dinner with the Perry Maxwell Society folks from Tulsa. So
that's a really cool shout out.
I know that's kind of a two courses, but I say Wild Horse because he didn't cover it at all. But yeah, in terms of a course that he did cover that I wish he would have spent a little more time on, Southern Hills, again, just from the local bias.
I'll give you a pass there. I think that makes sense, to given two courses of that answer. Next question. What course were you excited to read about because you've already played it? So you knew how good it was, and you're wanting the rest of the world to find out how good it was. Or maybe sometimes I don't want everybody else to know how good it was, so I'm glad I'm glad that he didn't talk about Wild Horse, in fact.
Yeah,
I'm happy. Keep your mouth shut about how great Wild Horse
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I took a different angle, I guess, on like why I put this as the course I was excited to read about. It wasn't okay. necessarily because I was excited to read about it so other folks would know how great it is. It was more finding out a little bit more about it.
Yeah.
And so when Bally Neal popped up as a course that he visited, which is a private course in Northeast Colorado that actually you and I had the chance to go visit a couple of years ago. I really leaned in on that one to see kind of what his experience was, because it's a totally different golf course than the course he had actually just, if he didn't just come from it, he wrote it like he did. He had wrote about Common Ground in Denver, which is a very public, very accessible course. Ballyneal is the opposite of that. It's very exclusive and hard to get to.
Which would have made sense to talk about because they're both Tom Doak courses.
Both Tom Doak designs. And so I was super excited to see his take on Ballyneal because I've heard different takes on it as a golf course, not necessarily as an experience, because I think most folks rave about the experience. I was interested to find out that it had once been in bankruptcy. So like the first go-round of Ballyneal did not go well. I think in 2012 it went into bankruptcy. New group bought it and has done a couple of things to turn it into what it was originally designed to be, which was very much a destination place for destination members. But they have a very similar policy, I guess, that Sand Hills in Nebraska does, that if you or your head pro writes a nice letter, you can go and play one time at Ballyneal, which was how we got to go experience it. So I thought that was an interesting read. And he did mention the milkshakes at Ballyneal,
I was going to ask you if JT's had it, almost gave him a flu game and played amazing because of the power of the milkshakes, right?
The power of the milkshakes are real. We'll leave that as a little bit of a nugget here, an Easter egg for folks who are listening and that we play golf with. You can ask me about the milkshakes at Ballyneal. But what about you? Like, what about, you've probably played as many or more golf courses as probably 1% of Americans get to play. What is a course that when you got to that chapter, it was like, oh man, I can't wait to see what he says here?
I'm gonna give you props for bringing up Ballyneal on this question, because the vibe there and the membership that they've accrued and filtered in was, for it being very exclusive and private, was one of the best experiences I've ever had on a golf course, and how the members, even the members, made you feel, let alone the people that work there made you feel. But the answer to the question is the one that I was most excited to read about. And I did not throw any curveballs here. I went straight down the middle to my favorite course on the planet is Pasatiempo. And so I am always stoked to see that come across any words or anybody talking about it. And so was very excited, when I saw, Pebble Beach, California on the chapter, did he go to Pasa? And he did. And he waxed poetic about Pasatiempo and had an absolute blast, and so just made my heart just fill up, and I absolutely loved anything about Pasatiempo.
I wondered if that was going to be your answer for course that you wish he would have spent more time on, and not necessarily because he gave it a throwaway sentence, but I know how much you love it, and I figured you'd expect that to have, a whole chapter dedicated to it. So I thought it might pop up in your, I wish you'd have spent more time. But I was also excited to read.
Like I said, there was a list of that question, which one do I think he spent more time on? Probably 10 courses that we could have talked about there. To cover it again, there's only so much time that you can spend describing, and there's only so many adjectives in the English, as good of a writer as Tom Coyne is, there's only so many adjectives that you can use to describe a golf course, right? I mean, and he did an amazing job covering what he did. I'm not knocking. I think he did an incredible job.
Yeah, and as we're going to get to, we're being kind of course heavy, if you will, right now. We're going to get to some of the, the stories or the characters or the different minutia that he went into that was probably made the book as entertaining as it was that it wasn't a golf course architecture's guide through America, right?
Great point. Way to hit on that,
Interwove a lot of great stories, both personal and otherwise, to the book.
Yep.
All right, next question I have for you would be, of the courses that he wrote about or were featured in the book, what did you leave reading most turned off by? So what course or club?
Yeah.
After you read about it, was the opposite of, man, now I'm excited to play there. It kind of led down a, I could probably
skip this one.
Skip that one.
Yeah. This one, there's only one that came to mind. And honestly, so there wasn't anything that he really, about any of the clubs or courses that he talked poorly about. But the one that came to mind for me was Garden City. And I'm pretty sure it's actually called Garden City Men's Club. And the thing is, get right off the bat, if I were to get an invite to Garden City, I 100% wouldn't turn it down by any means.
For all the Garden City members that are listening, like, right? Please don't.
But it's a men's only club, and you know, and I guess I just and we, there's other men's. It's not the only men's only club in the United States. There's a number of them. I don't understand the appeal of a men's only club. I'm not going to talk any differently around women than when women aren't there. I'm not going to tell any dirtier jokes or whatever. And I like having women around, I guess. Like, it doesn't bother me. And so, like, but I've never been to a men's club, so I don't want to judge it before being there. But him describing that he felt uncomfortable being at a place where his daughters weren't allowed around. And even though I don't have kids, like I can feel, I can be empathetic to that, I believe, and understand what he's talking about there, that he kind of felt guilty for having a good time is kind of what I took away from that. And even though he talked about having a great time and he enjoyed the place and his amazing golf course, it's kind of the opposite of what you want to feel at a golf course. You don't want to feel like, I want to feel comfy at a place, not like, ooh, I'm doing something dirty here.
Right.
What's your feeling on, before you get into your course, I'm curious, how do you feel about a men's
and for all of our club? Questions, I tried to jot down, you know, two or three answers just based on, you know, if I wasn't the first one to ask him, I'd have a backup. I had Garden City on my short list.
Would you turn down an invite to Garden City?
Would I turn down an invite? I mean, I can't think of, since by all accounts, the golf course itself is phenomenal, and it's on Long Island, so that means it has some links feel and some bounce to the turf.
Or some like, amazing views.
That probably trumps everything for me, is the golf course itself.
Right, yeah.
You know, short of anything being illegal happening, I think I could turn a blind eye to most anybody's comments how they feel about the world to experience a golf course. That said, yeah, I do think it's kind of weird that still is kind of happening. And, you know, it's a club like anything else, I suppose. Like, people, your club can make their own rules, and that's totally your prerogative if you're not doing anything illegal.
Yeah.
But I think that to Tom, not necessarily to Tom's credit, he does a good job of painting the membership at Garden City as, you know, super, you know, welcoming, and he didn't, you know, there weren't guys out there, you know, playing in their boxer shorts and stuff like that, like stuff that kind of urban myths about some of these men's clubs.
Yep.
So I guess it's not as big of a turnoff as I thought it would. His line about, yes, I'm not comfortable a place that my daughters wouldn't be able to play, totally resonated with me. That said, there's a lot of places that, like, I wouldn't want my daughter to be associated with or a part of, you know, that are a lot less welcoming than a golf club is. So I think that there are a lot of other things about golf clubs that are turnoffs, or golf courses that are turnoffs, which I can segue to the course that I picked as the thing I was most turned off by. Part of this was some inherent bias towards it, but Pebble Beach. He really leaned in on the fact of how expensive Pebble Beach is, that you, to even be able to play there, you have to stay on property, and that adds an expense to it. And then once you're on property, that they're gouging you for every last thing that you're buying. I've heard stories of guys who have been there talk about, you know, I ordered four drinks and I got a bill for $200. And it just kind of cemented the fact for me that, again, if somebody said, surprise, JT, we're taking you on a free trip to Pebble Beach for your birthday, would I say, no thanks? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
However, it further pushed it down the list of places that I'm going to seek out, given the fact that the price tag associated with it would let me play a variety of golf courses multiple times over. That's what put Pebble Beach on my top spot of courses I was turned off by Tom's portrayal of them.
You know, your description of Pebble Beach right there, kind of made me feel like it is the American golf course. And if you're not from America and you think of golf in America, there's only a handful of courses. If you don't know, you know, if you only know a handful of golf courses and you're from Germany, like you're thinking Pebble Beach, and you come over here and they nickel and dime you and try to squeeze every bit of capitalist marketing thing that they can pull. It's Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
It could be the quintessential. Yeah. Unfortunately, it wouldn't be neither one of our, you know, definition of what we think of a great American golf course, but just from a fact standpoint,
yeah,
it could fit that answer.
And, you know, I was, I guess, not hoping, but wondering if when he got to Pebble Beach, and I figured it would be in the book, that, you know, he would lay out a case that, yes, it's super expensive, but man, it's worth it because of this, this, and this. And he certainly didn't get there. Mm-hmm. And in fact, kind of, you know, reiterated my belief that Pebble is probably one of the more overrated to scale places in American golf.
Gotcha. So thinking back, I'm still so stuck on Garden City. The thing is when I think about different courses across, I hate defining and just naming one golf course, which is why I kind of thought he wouldn't name one, because I think, like most people, we like variety.
Right.
And so we like, I think it's okay to have a women's only golf club. I think it's okay to have a men's only golf club. That's fine. It just may not appeal to me, but it's unique and makes me think about, oh, that'd be fun to go. I like different experiences though. I like going to golf courses that don't have a dress code. I like going to golf courses that do have a dress code that I do have to dress up for. And I know it's kind of a pageantry thing, and it's kind of sometimes kind of weird and stuffy, but I like doing different things, mm-hmm. and I like dressing up and going through, following some customs on occasion. I don't like to do it all the time, but, so I like the variety of that, and thinking about, you know, those different stuffy policies, you know, and him in the book, you could tell by reading, you know, his descriptions of everything, his Great American Golf Course was not going to be a private exclusive club. While he had a fantastic time, and I think everybody would have a fantastic time at all of these clubs, he talks, a couple things stood out to me in terms of talking about a jackets only policy. How do you feel about a jackets only policy or a jacket and tie policy? Is that something that you would be excited about, or you're like, man, no, let's get rid of all of that and let you know, everybody dress however they want?
I mean, I would be excited about it. Excited is not the right word. I'd be cool with it if you're just well prepared for it, right? I think that clubs who do those things sometimes don't want guests or maybe new members to be comfortable. And I think when those policies are put in place for that, I would not be down with that. But if it's a, hey, I'm giving you an invite to National Golf Links of America, or I think Garden City was one of the other courses that had a jackets only policy. Mm-hmm. That's one of the first things I ask when I get invited somewhere nice is tell me all the insider rules that I need to know to make sure my first experience is good for me and good for my host. And if bring a jacket, because after golf, we're going to go to dinner or we're going to go to lunch and it's jackets required in the clubhouse. I think it's kind of cool. I would like that experience from time to time. I think where it would be a turnoff is if a club like doesn't have that well defined, or you kind of show up and you don't realize it, well, you know, nobody wants to be put in that position.
Oh.
But in terms of like, would I not go play there because, hey, you gotta wear a jacket in the clubhouse? To me, it's just an extension of being prepared if you need to take your hat off or you need to have your shirt tucked in, mm-hmm. and things like that, which again, I think it's hilarious places that have strict dress codes. They want you to tuck your shirt in, but they'll let you ride in a golf cart. It's like we're trying to protect the traditions of the game that you can't untuck your shirt, but it's fine to buzz around in a golf cart all day long. Like, I thought it was hilarious. I love Twin Hills, one of my favorite courses. This is a tangent, but I cracked up this summer when they did their like Hickories tournament.
No.
And it was like, you know,
Hickories and golf carts?
$85 entry fee, you know, 115 if you're going to take a golf cart or something like that. And I just cracked up. Like, we're going to play a hickory tournament and take a golf cart. That's a digression. But I would be in on it. Again, if it was well communicated, it would not be a turnoff to have a very strict dress code or a very nuanced dress code for bringing a jacket.
Actually, like I said, I like it. I wouldn't want every golf course to be that way. I like variety. If
I will say, it brings up all sorts of questions. Like, okay, are we showering between the round? Am I just putting my jacket like over my stinky golf clothes? Those are more of the things that I would be interested in than it being a turnoff. I know that when we've done, if not every one of these reviews, I think most of them, you always tend to have maybe it's a favorite quote or a favorite excerpt. That's not really something that I have come up with for all of these, but I was curious if you, if something stood out as a quote or an excerpt from the book that you wanted to highlight for folks.
Oh yes, I do.
And here we go.
And it comes from my man, David McClay Kid, DMK. He's the best. Okay, here we go. Quote.
Real fast.
Yeah.
Just for those who are living under a rock, David McClay Kid, golf course architect, extraordinaire at this point, did the first Bandon course. That's what made him famous. And now he's gone on to design courses all over the world.
The Mammoth Castle Dunes, Course.
Castle Course. And, so he just, the list is very
Tethero,
long.
Tethero.
But just for those Gamble who Sands. Don't know the name David McClay Kid.
I'm offended if you don't. And yeah, how dare you not? Everybody knows who DMK is, right? When I say DMK. All right. Quote, golf in America, in literary terms, has become a limerick, a simple formula. Over here, you know where your ball is going straight away. You know the result of a shot from the moment it's left the club face. And that's crap. That's turning a round of golf into mere seconds. Golf should feel more like a novel with chapters that unfold. You hit a shot, then you have to watch and wonder and pay attention and see how it turns out. The ground and the grasses we have here allow that to happen. And that's DMK on his course, Gamble Sands. So Gamble Sands could be his Great American Golf Course. It's publicly accessible, plays a little more like, you know, the home of golf and Scottish Links style, where you're hitting a shot and you get to watch it unfold and move around. It does, you know, a lot of times you're playing those New York courses that you hit those lush fairways, you hit it and you know right away it's going straight and you don't even have to watch it.
I will say Gamble Sands was number two on my I most want to play here after reading about it.
Yeah. So, it's high on the list. I have not been to Gamble Sands yet. Definitely need to get there to see DMK Magic.
Well, let's do what we always do. Let's rank this bad boy.
All right.
On a scale of 1 to 5, how would you rate A Course Called America?
My rating between 1 and 5 is a 4.12, which I feel like is really high.
Strong.
Like, I thought about
going strong.
High three. It could be high three. It could have been high threes. But I guess I was feeling generous today, maybe because it's so exciting. There's so much good info in there that I learned. I'm not sure it's a book. I'm kind of talking myself out of that range. I'm not sure it's a book that I would pick up and read again, though, after reading it the first time. Maybe I'd go back looking for some specific things. I don't know. So maybe I'm kind of talking myself out of it. But I think if you go buy this book, I got a hard time believing nobody's going to not enjoy it. So that's my rate. I'm sticking with it. 4.12. JT, what's your rating?
You know, and this has nothing to do, I assure you, because we're that Tom Coyne is a friend of the program at this point. But I would give it a 4.25, even higher than yours. That's what I had written down.
That's got to be the highest rating you've given a book on this podcast.
That is the highest rating thus far that I've given a book. I am somewhat of a literary hard grader, if you will. Yeah. I just think that a book that is obviously designed and focused on and pointed to the American golfer, this is almost an encyclopedia of American golf that also has entertaining stories, as I mentioned earlier, interwoven throughout it, right? So it's not a typical, let me just list out a bunch of courses and talk about it kind of book. It's entertaining, it's heartfelt, and Tom does a good job of kind of being self-deprecating along the way. And so I just think that, and maybe part of my ranking was thinking about when we were posting this pod, knowing that a lot of folks in this last couple months of the year they're thinking about not only what they're going to, you know, buy for the holidays, but they're probably thinking about 2024 golf, right? And if you're thinking about 2024 golf, or whenever you're listening to this, your next year's golf plans, what better book to read than one that lists all these golf courses in America that help you pick your next buddy's trip destination, or your next round of golf for vacation. So high praise, but I think worth it if you are if you're into golf and you're into golf in America.
100%.
Last question I have for you, and I feel like a book that is designed to elicit what does the great American golf course look like. I'm going to ask you straight away, if you had to pick one course, what would be the definition of your American golf course personified in one of the golf courses that you've played?
So for me, it's hard not to agree with Tom in that it feels like it's got to be accessible to everybody.
Yeah.
The Great American Golf Course, it would be tragic if it was one that only a select few got to play and enjoy. So criteria number one, it's got to be public. For me, it's got to be unique, and not feel like other golf courses that I've played. I feel like I have, my answer is going to be a bias towards the Midwest because I'm from the Plains Midwest, the middle part of the United States. It's not, I'm not from the coast. And so I feel like it could be, you could find these great American golf courses. It could be in California. It could be in New York. There's so many good golf courses there, but my answer could be biased because of where I'm from, but also a course that when you walk off it, you want to go right back to the first tee and you want to play it again. And you feel welcome there and you feel like you're part of the community. And the answer for me, without a doubt, this one wasn't hard to answer at all, is Wild Horse in Gothenburg, Nebraska. And I'm not sure I need to say anything more other than that it checked all of the boxes for me when I think about what a great American golf course is. If you go to Wild Horse Golf Course and you're from Germany or Australia or China or Argentina, I feel very confident that you are going to get a very authentic American golf experience playing Wild Horse, and you are going to have an absolute blast. JT, what is your great American golf course?
Truly, when we do these book review pods, or really any podcast where we're having a back and forth on something, we try to avoid having the same answer, but I can't do that here. Wild Horse Golf Club is by far the choice for the Great American Golf Course. And I really, it's hard to say more than you already said about it. I will highlight the biggest thing that you said there is, when I get done playing this golf course, all I want to do is go right back out and play more. When you can go, as I did, and play 2 days in a row and play 36 holes each day, so 72 holes over 2 days, and you do not get bored, you do not tired of it. To me, that's the ultimate standard for any golf course and how you are ranking it, if you will. The accessibility of it from a price point standpoint is where I would go. I mean, there's a lot of courses that, frankly, you know, a lot of folks can't afford to go play, even at a, you know, it's hard to justify even $150, $200 for a single round of golf. In Gothenburg at Wild Horse, under $100, I want to say $75 to play all day long. I think that that's a big piece of it. If it had one knock, it would be that even though it's in the middle of America and it's not as hard to get to as like abandoned dunes or going international, it's still a little bit difficult to fly to drive to. So if you had to give it one knock, but once you get there, you totally feel like you're a part of the community. I know we certainly felt that when we were there. And so Wild Horse, without a doubt, is my great American golf course.
And in addition to that, just the town itself, if you go during the Fireman's Ball, it talk about a slice of Americana and positive Americana as well. Like the town itself, everybody, you can tell the town takes pride in keeping it a very respectable community. It's very clean. Everybody takes care of everything and takes care of each other. And that shines through, and that's not always the case when you go to small town America these days.
I feel like we kind of did what we said we don't want to do with Wild Horse is get too many people excited about it and have even more people go up there to where they end up raising their rates and the tee times aren't as accessible. But, you know, you just got to do the right thing here. And people need to go experience Gothenburg and Wild Horse at least one time. But the problem is if you go one time, you'll go back 10 times because it's so, so great.
The YSO pod where you get the facts, the straight shooting. We're not going to hide anything from anybody. We're going to let them know.
Clearly the only podcast that you're going to learn about what will now be the 46th annual Fireman's Ball, first weekend of June every year. Ah,
the best barbecue buffet in your life.
Oh, I can taste it now, dude. So before we wrap up, any parting thoughts?
Yeah. One thing that I feel like we haven't touched on, but is a big theme throughout the book, is Tom's relationship with his father and his home club that he grew up on. And that is one thing that, like you described earlier, this isn't a book just about the description of all these golf courses. It's about the stories and the people that you meet and the relationships that you have, and him talking about his relationship with his father and getting to play, you know, some final rounds there and where he got his start and love of golf, you know, makes you feel very nostalgic for your start in golf and also your relationship with your father. And man, this has really motivated me that I need to play more golf with my dad. And I'm on this pod, I'm going to make a commitment.
I love it.
Right here, 2024, get my dad out. I've asked him before, but he's been hesitant, and it's been a couple. He does go out and play with me on a cape, but he doesn't even have clubs. So I'm going to make way harder of an effort to get him into the game of golf. And I'm not always one to grow the game of golf because selfishly I want fewer people out there playing golf. I need the tee times. Let me buzz around as fast as I can. But 2024, I'm going to grow the game and spend more time with my dad out on the golf course. That's it, folks, right here. JT, any parting thoughts from you? Do you want to add on to that or any thoughts of your own from the book?
No, well said. I think that we often make fun of the grow the game analogy. And there are times when, yes, let's get the folks. Let's combine like the thing we love the most with the people that we love the most. I think whether that's a dad, a spouse, a kid, I will say that stuck out to me from the book was these memories that are created through the game of golf that you're only going to get if you ask somebody to come along that is not currently part of your golfing life. So well said there. I think that's a great way to end this podcast. Again, we hope you've enjoyed our book review pods. The You're Still Out Book Club. We'll see where this goes in 2024, but this will wrap up the book club for 2023. So we encourage you to go either clearly to Amazon, or you can go to tomcoyne.com. That is C-O-Y-N-E is how you spell coin, tomcoyne.com, and pick up a copy of Course Called America. Until then, folks, you heard it here. There's so many golf courses in America, whether it's in your backyard or some far-flung locale. Get out there and enjoy the walk.